My favorite chant in the history of college athletics is when they call the Hogs and they do the Pig Suey chant. Now, I know a lot of times when I do the Pig Suey chant on the radio, especially since we're on a lot of Southern stations, they get annoyed with me because a lot of them don't like Arkansas. And then also, I don't know how well the chant does sound on the radio. But with that being said, ooh, Pig Suey! Ooh, Pig Suey! Ooh, Pig Suey! Razorbacks! I love me the Pig Suey chant. I think my ears are ringing out after hearing that as well. But Jeff Passan just put this into perspective, even though I'm blocked by Jeff Passan on Twitter. With that being said, though, because of the new Twitter, I can't see his tweets. I just can't respond to him. Arkansas right-handed pitcher Gage Wood just threw his threw the first no-hitter in the College World Series since 1960. I think the only one that remembers that was either Ack or Samter going back to 1960. Wood is projected to be a first-round pick in July's draft. Was an eighth-inning hit-by-pitch away from a perfect game, and he finished with 19 strikeouts. Now, he did, it looked like, appear to hit a batter in the ninth inning, too. They overturned it, and they said he leaned into a pitch, and he ended up bringing up that batter as well. So you remember the last time, Samter, the old man Samter, 1960, the last time there was a no-hitter in the College World Series? You and Ack, right?
I was 33 at the time, yeah.
You guys were probably both there with some popcorn. It probably cost you about 25 cents to get in the building, about 5 cents for popcorn, and maybe 10 cents for a large soda, I would imagine.
I mean, Ack and I sat right next to each other. It was incredible.
Oh, right next to one another. And let me tell you, that's when Ack was a chatterbox, probably. That was maybe when Ack had a little whiskey, too. Ack was probably fun back then.
Oh, we used to party back in the 70s, dude.
Yeah, you and Ack at all the sorority houses. What a sight that probably was. Anyway, Samter and Stu's got some questions for me. I'll try to give you some answers. It is a Monday. We do the segment every Monday and Friday. Sometimes in the summer, we do it on Thursdays because I take a lot of Fridays off. But it is a Monday, so let's go to Onside Offside. Stuart, hit it.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All righty, Stu Pock, what do we got cooking?
All right, so the Dallas Cowboys are entering a crucial year as they work out a new deal with Micah Parsons, welcome in a new head coach, and see Dak Prescott return from yet another injury. Now, over the weekend, Dak discussed the importance of winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I want to win a championship. The legacy, the things, whatever comes after I finish playing will take care of itself. I want to win a championship. Be damned if it's just for my legacy or for it's for this team, for my personal being, for my sanity. Yeah, the legacy will take care of itself. I have to stay where my feet are.
So, Onsides, Offsides, Dak has been more of a disappointment than Tony Romo was.
I'm going to go offside because I think they're even. They're the same, right? Both of these guys are good quarterbacks. They're not great quarterbacks. They both get into the postseason, and when they get into the postseason, 9 times out of 10, something goes wrong, and in the rare chance something goes right, then they lose immediately the next week afterwards. So, Jerry Jones never saw Tony Romo get to an NFC Championship game. Jerry Jones has never seen Dak Prescott get to an NFC Championship game. So I can't say one is more disappointing than the other. So you're saying Dak has been more of a disappointment than Tony Romo. I think they're equal, so I will go offside.
Offside.
Now, real quickly here. Legacy of Dak Prescott. What is it? Stu, what's the legacy of Dak Prescott if his career were to end tomorrow, doesn't end with the championship or not even an NFC title game appearance? What would you think the legacy would be?
Average quarterback. That's all I can think of. It's just like in the middle, like a Derek Carr type of guy. Just average quarterback.
I think Dak is a little bit better than Derek Carr. I would feel more confident with Dak as my quarterback than Derek Carr, but once again, those aren't great options. Samter, what's the legacy of Dak Prescott if he doesn't go on to get to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl?
James Harden.
I think James Harden was a better player. James Harden won MVP.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, we'll still get to see what Dak has done. I mean, Dak has done some pretty impressive stuff. He almost won MVP. I think he won second, third place a couple years ago.
Almost.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, it's on that similar level. A guy with great regular season stats who disappears in the playoffs, chokes and loses to teams he's supposed to beat.
Now, I know the Basketball Hall of Fame lets everybody in, but James Harden is a Hall of Famer. He will be a Hall of Famer, even with their standards. If they were even stricter, he would have been a Hall of Famer. Dak is not going to be a Hall of Famer. You think Dak's going to be a Hall of Famer?
I mean, he still has, what, five more years? Six more years?
He would have to have five rock star years for me to ever think about Dak Prescott being. We have conversations about Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers, you want to make comparison to James Harden? That's Phillip Rivers. Now, Phillip Rivers had a much better career, in my opinion, than Dak Prescott. I don't think Dak has a legacy. I think a lot of times you go, what's the legacy of a player? Legacy to me is someone, and I know you could have a negative legacy, but the way that I view legacy in sports in terms of quarterbacks, it's someone that's revered. It's someone that's an all-time great. It's someone that changed the game. What has Dak done? He's done what the Cowboys been the last 25 years. Good player, solid player, always in the news, and when push comes to shove, he comes up small. So I don't think that you think of legacy. It's can you tell the story of the NFL without Dak Prescott? For the good or the bad. Sometimes guys get synonymous with a terrible legacy because something bad gone wrong. Like, for example, Ryan Leaf has a legacy. Jamarcus Russell has a legacy. It's not for good reasons. It's for being some of the biggest draft busts of all time. Can I tell the history of the NFL in a positive or a negative way without Dak Prescott? Absolutely. So that's why I don't even ever... Legacy has never even crossed my mind with Dak Prescott. Because the guy's good, but he hasn't done enough, good or bad, to make you think that this is a guy that you have to remember 15, 20 years from now. All righty, next question.
All right, Travis Kelce flirted with retirement, but is back for at least one more year after an underwhelming 2024 season and an embarrassing performance in the Super Bowl. Now, Kelce has reportedly told the Chiefs that he has slimmed down, shedding 25 pounds from his weight of 250 last season. On Tides All Sides, Kelce will have over 1,000 yards again this season.
I'll tell you, I'll give credit to Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. They went to the Florida Panthers game and they were in a box. I saw a video. Stu, I know that you're more involved in the Swifty algorithm, but I saw a video of Taylor Swift talking to everyone in the box next door, right? Bunch of kids. And one of the mothers goes, oh, my son would love to meet Travis. And she called Travis over and Travis took a photo with the kid and everything. It was pretty cool for stars that are that big to just be nice to people, right? You're not asking for anything crazy. And I understand it's in a luxury box, so it's more of a secluded area. But I still thought that was pretty cool what Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift did for the kids. And then I even saw, I think this was in Florida, the next day she went to a children's hospital. And she was surprising children at the children's hospital. And she walked up to one of the videos I saw, she's like, hi, I'm Taylor. Yeah, everyone knows who you are. Even the kid was basically saying, yeah, we know who you are. So the last time Travis Kelce had a 1,000-yard season was in 2022. He came close in 2023 in 984, 2024 at 823. I don't think they need him to have a 1,000-yard season. I don't. He just needs to show up in the postseason. So Travis Kelce will have over 1,000 yards this season. I'm going to say offside.
Offside.
The Carolina Panthers had the worst record in football in 2023, but bounced back last year going 5-12, winning two of their last three games. Now, running back Chuba Hubbard is setting expectations very high, telling the Charlotte Observer, quote, guys are finally sick of being the same old Carolina Panthers. If the goal isn't to make the playoffs and win the Super Bowl, you're selling yourself short. That's the goal this year, and we're the closest we've ever been, end of quote.
Oh, jeez. I remember this. I know he's talking about himself, but this is an organization that has played in the Super Bowl twice. Twice. So don't tell me it's the closest you've ever been. Now, maybe you individually, sure, but that's not saying much.
On Tides All Sides, the Panthers will finish above 500 this year.
So they're not a Super Bowl contender, hot take. Above 500. They were 5-12 last year. My gut tells me no, but let's go through it. They play Jacksonville week one. I'm going to say that's a win. Then at Arizona week two, I'm going to say a loss. They're in Atlanta. They play Atlanta. They play Atlanta twice. They'll win one of those. This is a home game, so I'll say that's a win. They're at New England. I'm going to say loss. They're at Miami. I'm going to say win. I was just going to split those. So that's three wins right there. They then play Dallas. I'm going to say a loss. They're at the Jets. I could see that being a win. They play the Bills. I'm going to say a loss. They're at Green Bay. That's a loss. They play the Saints. I'll say that's a win. I gave them a victory up against Atlanta the first time, so they'll lose this go around. They're at San Francisco. Loss. Rams. Loss. They play the Saints. They probably split the Saints, right? So I think I gave them a win against the Saints the first time.
Yeah, you gave them a win the first time.
So I give them a loss here. They'll beat Tampa Bay once, so I'll give them six right there. Seattle, probably a loss. And then Tampa Bay, already gave them a win. They're going to be a... If everything goes right, I think they're an 8-9 football team. If everything goes right. So... Are they going to finish above 500 this year? That means they have to get to 9-8. Yeah, that's a no for me, dog. Offside.
Offside.
The Thunder even the series at 2-2 despite trailing by 8 in the fourth quarter of Game 4. Now the teams head back to OKC for Game 5 tonight, with the Thunder favored by 9.5 points, even though their margin of victory for the series is so far is just 3.25 points. Onside, offsides, people are still disrespecting the Pacers.
Why? Because everyone now thinks the Thunder are going to win back this series again?
Right.
I think it's fair this time. I thought it was silly after game one. I thought it was a little silly after game two, even when, you know, the Thunder finally won. This go-around, when you had them on the ropes, you had to knock them out, because then everyone would have to shut the bleep up. And you had a chance to do so, and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the final 438, scored 15 points. I do think the Thunder are going to win tonight. And it wouldn't shock me if this is going to be their 63rd double-digit win of the season. So I am going to say, when you ask me, people are still disrespecting the Pacers. I've been leading the train saying people are disrespecting the Pacers. I think it's warranted here, so I'm going to go offside.
Offside!
The Panthers took a 3-2 series lead over the Oilers in the Stanley Cup Finals thanks to two more goals by Brad Marchand.
As I said, when he got traded there, it should be illegal that he got traded there.
And they look to secure their second straight cup in Tuesday's Game 6 in Florida. Now, last year, the Oilers came back from a 3-0 series deficit before falling in Game 7 to these Panthers. Onside, offsides, the Oilers will force a Game 7.
Could they? Yes. Will they? I'm not picking against the Florida Panthers, so I'm going offside there.
Offside!
JJ Spawn won the U.S. Open 2 strokes ahead of Robert McIntyre thanks to this epic 65-foot winning putt.
One of the hardest, if not the hardest test in major championship golf. For the win, JJ Spawn, ball up and over the ridge. It's on a very good line. This could go in. JJ Spawn makes it.
Bang!
It's the biggest moment of his career. JJ Spawn conquers Oakmont and is your 125th U.S. Open champion.
Now, Spawn was the only golfer who finished the tournament under par. And he was just one under himself. The only one to finish under par. Onside, offsides, the U.S. Open is not as fun to watch as the other major tournaments because of the high scores.
It's sloppy, but I think it makes it more relatable, if I'm being honest. Now, I would love to play the way that those guys play, but you see actual frustration from golfers when usually they make it look so easy. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, that isn't fun. So the U.S. Open is not as fun to watch other major tournaments because of the high scores and how difficult the course is. I'm going to disagree with that. They gave me everything you wanted. You had a crowded leaderboard. You wish you would have had a few more elite names, but you had a crowded leaderboard, and it was an exciting finish. You didn't know what was going to happen. So I'm going to say offside there when you ask if the U.S. Open is not as fun to watch the other major tournaments because of high hopes, because you don't know what to expect.
Offside.
After months of drama behind the scenes and in front of the cameras, the Red Sox shocked the baseball world last night by trading superstar Rafael Devers to the Giants. Now, the move comes after Devers' public spat about being moved to DH and then refusing to play first base when Tristan Casas got hurt. Boston fans were furious by the deal, relating it to the terrible trade the Sox made by dealing Mookie Betts to the Dodgers a few years ago. Onside, offsides, considering Devers' behavior this season, the Sox made the right decision by trading him.
I'm okay trading him with how little they got in return. You can't trade him. And you could have got a lot more, and they could have shopped him, and they really could have got a lot more than what they got yesterday. So that's why I'm not okay that they traded him. So I'm going to go offsides there, just because of the way that they went about it.
Offside.
It's all offside so
all
far?
All offside, 7-7.
Let's see if we go 8.
All right, Shohei Ohtani is back on the mound tonight after focusing solely on hitting the past year and a half while recovering from Tommy John surgery. Now, 21 months removed from his second UCL surgery, the three-time MVP wasn't expected back on the mound until after the All-Star break, and maybe not until August, but he has recovered quicker than the team thought. Onside's offsides, the Dodgers are making a mistake by letting Ohtani return to the mound now.
He says he's ready to go. If the doctors agree with it, I'm fine with it. You're paying him all that money. Let's see what he can get. I understand people are going to be cautious, 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 and if God forbid something happens tonight, people are going to lose their mind and slam this, but you're paying him a lot. He says he's ready to go in an inning or two. The medical staff says that's good to go. I'm okay with that. And also, I think you got to remember, you can't do a traditional rehab start with him because of how valuable his bat is. So I'm fine with this, and we'll see how it plays on out. But if Ohtani does get hurt once again throwing, we know what he can still do at the plate, and that has not hindered him whatsoever in this recovery the last year and a half while he continued to hit and continued to not only hit, but hit an MVP level and also win a World Series. So I'm fine, but there's eventually going to have to be a conversation if he gets injured pitching again. Well, do you just make him a reliever? Or do you maybe just say, okay, ditch the pitching, just go to the plate because we know how great you are there. So the Dodgers make a mistake letting Ohtani return to the mound now. We'll go 8-for-8 on the offside department.
Offside.
Chris Persiainen is going to join us in studio next. He's been all over this NBA offseason as he's had a lot of reports out there. We'll talk to one of our favorite insiders here at the network when we come on back. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Chris Persiainen works here, and I knew that name before he even started working here because he does a great job for Clutch Points, and I always used to see him because he's a Fordham guy, right? You're a Fordham guy?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I would always see you on my social media feed, and you'd be putting out all these like NBA nuggets and things like that. But you were all over my social media feed this past weekend with your reporting about the Knicks head coaching search and then your reaction after the Desmond Bane trade. What does that mean for Jaren Jackson Jr.? So I said, you know what? Let's chop it up and talk to someone that I like around here. You know, it's rare that I like someone around here, and Chris Persiainen. And I got your name correct, right?
Yes, you did.
Because you were aggregated today, and someone just totally botched that name. And not an easy name. But they just totally messed that up. Like, I think they called you Peruzianen or something like that.
I mean, listen, I often joke that it's like, you know, you let like your dog or cat run across your keyboard. And yeah. That's how I got my last name.
Well, at least they're tagging you correctly. Because
yeah,
sometimes
right? Come on.
There's another Zach Gelb, I guess, on social media. And he doesn't even live in the U.S. And he goes, I appreciate my 15 seconds of fame that I get when you break things. Because there's one account in particular that tags him. And it's either his name is Zach Gelb or it's Zach Gilb, G-I-L-B,
right.
And he always gets the notifications and he goes, it's cool being someone that people care about for about 15 seconds.
It's funny seeing, you know, especially in a world now where self-publishing is so prevalent and anyone can get on any app and start reporting stuff. Like, it's funny seeing the amount of celebrities that have a similar name to another celebrity that get yelled at. I mean, we've got one here at the station. Right, we've got a guy who gets screamed and yelled at when the Michigan State Spartans.
Oh, Tom Izzo. Yeah. I actually, funny story, and we were just talking about this before you got on the air about aggregation, and I was telling you about the night where I was at the NBA draft, and I was the one that told Kobe White about his teammate getting drafted. He did the whole wow, wow, wow video. That night, though, because I was working for, obviously, here and WFAN, and they said, if you get any crazy videos, make sure you text Tom Izzo, who's the digital guy. Well, I have Tom Izzo, the Michigan State basketball coach number. And I have Tom Izzo, obviously, my coworker's number. I've never texted the other Tom Izzo, meaning to text our Tom Izzo. And that night, because I knew this video was going to be big, I just sent the text off quickly. And then 45 minutes later, I realized, because Tom Izzo, our Tom Izzo texted us saying, hey, this is a great video. You know, why did you send it to me?
Wow, I've never seen this video before.
I did send it to you. And I'm like, oh, wait, I texted you. He goes, no, you didn't. I go, oh, I texted the actual Tom Izzo, not the Tom Izzo that works here on the digital side. But anyway, let me get a few reactions and we'll talk about the Knicks. Desmond Bane over the weekend got traded to the Magic for 4 first-round picks. I know there's other things that were included in the deal. I think a lot of people look at this and they go, 4 first-round picks for Desmond Bane, who's a good player, but how do you trade 4 first-round picks? I think a lot of times this is a cross sport where people are looking at it as if it was 4 NFL picks, 4 NBA picks. I'm going to the draft, by the way. I go each and every year. I love going to the draft. I'm going this year with NBA experiences. They do a great job taking care of me and all that stuff. But and right, it's really fun. They give you great seats, and you get all that, and they bring you behind the scenes, and you get all the food and the drinks. It's
there we
awesome.
Go.
I love going. I went last year. It was fantastic, and works again. Let's go out there again. But the NBA draft after last year, the first pick, no one knew who the heck he was. Zachary Rosashier. After 4 or 5 picks of this draft, you really don't know who they are. And the Magic are going to be in a spot where, at worst, they'll be a 6 or a 7 seed for the next 5-6 years. So what's the big deal about trading first-round picks?
That's the big thing with me for the Orlando Magic here is the deal. You can't help but notice the parallels between this trade and the New York Knicks acquisition of Mikal
Bridges.
Now, there are some key differences. The Knicks did not include any players that were going to be in the rotation in the upcoming season. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, obviously, was just a big signing for the Magic. But it also shows the kind of goldfish-like memory you've got to have in this modern NBA landscape with the second apron, with things changing as fast as they do, with stars being able to demand out as often as they can. They signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They said, wow, we're going to give over $20 million a year to this guy. He's going to be so awesome. Compliment our young core. Do what they can't. Do what they can do, but do it without the ball in his hands. He's going to help us. So, and then a year later, flipped, right? And he gets sent. His championship DNA was the selling point for the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, that's worked out great for them before with Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose and all the other guards they bring in that are, you know, vets and have this winning DNA to try and mentor Ja Morant. You know, we'll see how that goes. But for me, the Magic did two things, and it's what the Knicks did. The Knicks did two things at the same time as well. They both signaled to the NBA landscape that they think they're a little closer than you think they are, and that this player can help them bridge that gap, no pun intended. But they also...
Well, that was a pun intended.
I may have realized like halfway through the sentence. They also are fading the market for those picks, right? Because if you're planning on being a good team, then like you said, they'll finish, top 5-6 in the East. They're not going to pick in the top 20 probably once in the next 5 years, you know, depending on how things shake out with injuries. Of course, that could change, but those picks are all going to be at the end of the first round where the hit rate, forget for a star, the hit rate to get a 10-plus year career out of a rotation guy is not necessarily the NFL's first round. You
sure.
know?
And that's right. We saw Rudy Gobert go for a boatload of picks. And we've seen Bridges go for a boatload of picks. Now we've seen Desmond Bane go for a boatload of picks. I think people should just adjust their previous ways into what it's going to be moving forward. It's still, though, mind-boggling.
Yes.
That Luka Doncic, that's the name that's always going to be. It's almost when you talk about the Hall of Fame in baseball and someone doesn't get in that should get in and people go, well, how does Harold Baines get in but this guy can't get in? The Luka Doncic one becomes the white whale, I guess you could say here, where it's, oh, well, Desmond Bane goes for 4. Bridges goes for, 5? Yep. Gobert goes for whatever it was, 4
Walker,
or 5.
Walker, Kessler, and 5.
Yeah, and Luka Doncic, I know AD was in that trade, went for 1 first round.
Yeah, and you know that I know it's maybe talking about names like Luka Doncic and other all-time Hall of Famers in MLB, right? Maybe this name is a bit of a polar bear in Texas, but like to me, the De'Aaron Fox trade comes to mind as well. To what extent was that deal influenced by agents, by players? Because when you look at the return that Sacramento got for him, it's not commensurate with
the
Bane
one of the
return,
worst organizations in sports.
Or the Bridges return. But the Brooklyn Nets got the haul they did for Mikal Bridges, and they're no paragon of success in their history in the NBA. So, you know, to me, I think seeing that go down that way as well, I'm interested to see what the situation is in Sacramento, if that isn't something that other teams try to, you know, pluck another player or two away from.
So what else does Memphis do now? I don't think Morant's getting traded, but the name that you've gone with is Jaren Jackson Jr.
So Shams Charania just reported today on ESPN that the Grizzlies are signaling that they intend to build around Morant and Jackson Jr. Now, that's a clear message, right? Okay, don't call about these guys. We're holding on to them. But Zach, you've seen enough reports in your life. Sure. If someone's reporting that a team might be signaling that they intend to build it, it seems like at least things are in flux, right? And I would say the Memphis Grizzlies were not going into this offseason planning to trade Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic. I think they got a phone call and they went, wait, how much? Oh, yeah, we'll talk about this.
Sure.
So things change fast. And we were talking about this earlier. Things change fast in the NBA. So for Memphis, should they now look into what they could get for someone like Jackson Jr. or someone like Morant? Could a team like Houston, after striking out on someone like Kevin Durant, potentially say they do, say he goes to Miami? Would Houston turn around and say, you know what, we've got young talent in the coffers, we've got picks, let's go get Ja Morant and have Udoka build a defensive lineup around his offensive, you know, explosiveness? Like, I think things can change quickly, and the Grizzlies are going to explore what's best for them. I would expect them to want to extend Jackson Jr. this offseason, not move him anywhere, and make sure that if they are going to deal him at some point soon, they're at least... They're not selling someone a car that's got 2 months left on the lease, right? Like, they're putting an extra 24, 36 months on that car lease and then selling that paperwork to someone.
So your stuff on Jaren Jackson Jr., that was, there's one, was it front office member of the Knicks? That's their dream guy.
At least one key member of the Knicks front office has long coveted Jackson Jr. You know, that could be evidenced potentially if you want to look at it this way, which I think with the Rose front office, it's important to look at things this way. From January 2021 to May 2023, Jaren Jackson Sr., no alliteration there, was an assistant coach on Derek Alston and on Dessogne Diop's staff with the Westchester Knicks, the G League affiliate. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly a relationship, you know, Jackson Jr. previously represented by Rose at CAA. This is a relationship that they want to keep in the family, you know, and I do think it comes down to what does Memphis want to do? Because Jackson Jr. is someone I could see being amenable to a deal to New York, but that's if he's getting moved in the first place.
So I keep on hearing people throw out the Knicks, right, in terms of making a trade, right? You heard it about Durant. That seems as if that's cooled off. Giannis was there for a little bit. There was some weird wording, the tsunami offer.
The tsunami-like off, yeah.
And I go, well, what's the tsunami-like pieces that the Knicks have? If it was for Jaren Jackson Jr., is that centered around a Bridges deal for Jaren Jackson Jr.?
So in my article for Clutch Points where I talk about the fact that the Knicks have long been interested in Jackson Jr., you know, employed his dad years back, and that same member of the Knicks front office would see Towns and Jackson as like a dream pairing in the front court. Well, that is something that the team knows you got to give to get. And I would think Mikal Bridges would be the centerpiece in that kind of deal. Someone like Mitchell Robinson fills out the salary. And then that leaves Memphis, you know, able to take Brandon Clark, for example, and some of their other intriguing young talent, maybe Clark and Gigi Jackson and draft capital that they got from, oh yeah, the four picks they got from Orlando. Maybe they could turn around at the trade deadline and be the team that's at the top of those big time offers for big time players. So they've bought themselves some flexibility.
I thought that when the offseason, well, not when the offseason, sorry, it hadn't technically started yet, but when the NBA postseason saw the Bucks get eliminated, I've never been someone that said that the Bucks to trade Giannis, and I never thought Giannis was going to request a trade. I thought that was going to happen. Now I obviously do not. I thought that for 2 or 3 days. But when I thought that, I said to myself, oh, well, if I'm the Spurs, I would go trade for Giannis, and you give up those assets. I also then followed that up by saying Durant to the Heat. Now, with Giannis out of the picture, probably not getting traded, and a lot of people already assumed Durant would go to the Spurs, now I'm kind of cooling on that. I'm going back to now Durant going to the Heat because Pat Riley is desperate at this stage of his career. He's not any younger. Do you agree that Durant's going to be on the Heat?
I like that take, Zach. I like the thought that the same way that the Golden State Warriors reportedly had interest in Kevin Durant and LeBron James and these big names, and then, you know, oh, Jimmy Butler is available. Oh, let's go do what it takes to land him. I do feel like now the Heat are in that situation where, well, Jimmy Butler was plucked away from them, and now they can replace him with Kevin Durant. They might do just that. To me, it's going to come down to what the Phoenix Suns choose to do here. And I don't mean that with regard to the package they choose in return. I mean the extent to which they choose to placate or please Kevin Durant. If they decide, hey, this guy says he really doesn't want to go to Minnesota, but that's the best offer we got on the table, Kevin, get ready to learn Canada Goose. You know, that could be what happens. And all of a sudden that Miami Heat conversation that had a lot of legs under it, that was, you know, logical, backed up by real process and your thought process and takes, all of a sudden it goes out the window because the Suns said, well, that trade package is just, oh, Rob Dillingham. Ooh, we love him. So it always comes down to stuff like that. I think Miami's a good guess. The Wiggins salary stands out as, you know, a piece to be moved there. And especially with the Suns seeming like they're not going to want too much draft capital, or at least they know where they stand and they know they can't demand too much. Yeah, I would probably rule the Spurs out, even though they're in that final grouping, only because I've heard that the Suns are kind of aware of how flush the Spurs are. The Spurs right now are like DJ Khaled suffering from success. The Suns look at them and they say, yeah, you have a lot to give us. We're going to want more from you than anyone else if you're trading for KD.
The Suns may tell the Spurs another one.
Another one.
I put out this pie chart the other day, Chris Persian.
I liked it.
And it was Knicks coach, not who I think it should be, but who I think it will be. I put Mike Brown at 27%, Johnny Bryan at 26%. I'm still considering Jason Kidd because he could be a snake, even though the Mavs said no at 23%. Taylor Jenkins, 18%. Michael Malone, 4%. And then a mystery name, because you never know what could happen, at 2%. Right now, you have to take a guess on the 16th day of June in the year of 2025. Who will be coaching the Knicks this upcoming season?
You know, there's so much in flux with the Dallas Mavericks and Jason Kidd. You know, Billy Donovan, someone that the Knicks showed interest in and who has now gotten a little pay bump. Hey, we do appreciate your services around here. A little raise from the Bulls as a result of his, for lack of a better term, flirting with the Knicks, right? Kidd, this guy's not flirting. This guy's in full pursuit. He has Brian Windhorst out here saying there's mutual interest. That doesn't surface to the table until, you know, there's actual mutual interest. So for Jason Kidd, I think there's a little bit of a factor with the Mavericks of how bad do you really even want to be here? Like, how much do we have to pay you to feel like you want to work for us? If that sours, I would still say Jason Kidd's the leader in the proverbial clubhouse for the job. If not, yeah, they're interviewing Taylor Jenkins first this week, then Mike Brown. I think they'd go Jenkins over Brown. Not that a potential pursuit of Triple J would be related to that with the Grizzlies connection, but maybe a nice cherry on top if that's how things happen to work out. I would go Kidd number one and maybe Jenkins number two at this point in the process, where the Knicks are realizing, hey, these guys aren't shaking free. We weren't expecting these guys to shake free at the top of our list, but it is just about time with the draft coming up, like you said, in about 2 weeks to, you know, find someone to take this job and that they're comfortable with hiring.
I know that you talked about how, what was it, one member of the Knicks brass did talk to John Calipari.
Yes.
I'm not expecting John Calipari to be the Knicks head coach. Hot take of the day. I know.
Hold your breath.
Is there any other names that maybe haven't been thrown out there that maybe, or situations that maybe people should monitor?
There definitely are, because of the wide net that the Knicks cast at the start of this search. So, you know, we talked a lot, and you know, whether that's out in the newsroom or even just people on social media, everyone's like, oh, who are they going to request next? You know, who are they? That's an example, though, of the extent to which this franchise values conducting its due diligence, or what it sees as its due diligence. And part of that process has involved reaching out to college coaches, NBA assistants, former NBA head coaches. I'll say this. I'll throw this nugget out here. There's one coach in the Big 12 that has the Knicks' interest to an extent, at least to enough of an extent, where I would say he's still a name. Maybe not one of the big fish, you know, circling around the stake in the water, but maybe, you know, one of the little guys underneath, seeing if he can't grab a piece of the action.
Can I take a guess here?
You can take a guess here.
Big 12. Now, when you say big fish and use that, is he a big fish in the Big 12? Because I think of the biggest fish in the Big 12, and I think Bill Self. That would be my thought process.
I'll say no, not Self, and not any Cougar related.
Okay, so not Kelvin staff. Sampson.
No, yeah, those, I feel like those are the two biggest fish. Neither one of those. So the, like, if that's not an example of how deep the Knicks are looking, you know, then I think I don't know what would be. But this is definitely a search that they're interested in making sure that there's alignment at the end of it. We hear that term a lot, but what does it actually mean? Well, you know, someone who will listen. Maybe not always do what the front office wants, but they'll listen.
Could his brother be interested in the job if the Knicks came calling on this Big 12 coach? Is it a Hurley?
I don't have it as a Hurley either.
Okay.
I will say I have heard that his brother
would love the job.
Did have some level of interest in the job, but we know the NIL landscape nowadays. We know that college coaches, and that's why I'm kind of stepping carefully around the other name I mentioned, or won't mention rather, but college coaches very set on keeping their donors happy. That's part of the job description now. And so
I've used up my guesses. Hurley, so I'll be respectful.
Dan Hurley is someone I'd say saw the situation early and said, man, I'm probably not going to get this job. Let me not cause civil war in stores by flirting for it like the Lakers gig. So he pulled out right away. I think that was a smart move by him.
Who wins tonight?
That's a great question, Zach. I've got to go with Oklahoma City. I've got to go with Oklahoma City because they are more talented. The Pacers, you know, you want to talk about OKC, all their analytics. The Pacers have the dog per 48 minutes that the Thunder just haven't in some moments. That's why they beat the Knicks. That's why they've beaten teams like the Cavaliers on their way to the finals. I have the Thunder winning tonight because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, to me, seems so unfazed by the environment he's playing in. Halliburton, we've seen, have a higher peak than maybe Shai with that game winner in game one, but we've also seen the lows are a little lower. So Pacers, I think, win one more game in this series at minimum, but I have the Thunder winning tonight and the series.
Okay, so then you have potentially, it sounds like you're on Thunder in seven is what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, I think they've got the best closer in the game of basketball. And I know the Clutch Player of the Year award is a year-to-year thing, but if there was a decade-long award, I would think in about five more years, Shai would deserve it for the last 10.
They're not going to like that on an Indianapolis affiliate right now after doing what Hal Alberton's done this year.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has this... I can only liken it to prime Chris Paul, but it's so different because he's half a foot taller. But it feels like he has this magic wand where he can pause time on the court, pause the shot clock.
Well, hopefully he wins a championship on like Chris.
Move the defense, bend the floor however he wants it to be, and then attack. And I think maybe those extra 6 inches he's got on CP3 might help him do just that and win a chip.
He does a great job for us here at the Infinity Sports Network. You'd also read him on Clutch Points. He is Chris Persiani. And Chris, we'll be using you again. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Sounds like a plan, Zach.
Alrighty,
appreciate you.
Let's get the latest update in with the Yak Man, Rich Ackerman. Sing it for Gresh. You listening, big boy? All righty. Hope Gresh enjoyed that. Stu, bump it up a little bit. We should AI this somehow, because that's legit. Like, that was them singing this. We should AI this and make a Gresh version. That would be great. It's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Rob in California says, Zach, who do you got in Game 5 tonight? You could submit a question by tweeting at INF Sports Center, at Zach Gelb, using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts or your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I'll tell you, I have a conflict tonight. Big conflict. So it rained Saturday, it rained Sunday. And there was not a ton of sports on Sunday. And I was watching a lot of the U.S. Open. And Saturday, you only had one game that we really gave a rat's ass about, and that was the Stanley Cup Final. So I got all caught up to date. You were not expecting this from your favorite sports talk show host. On Love Island, USA. And I think I watched 10 or 11 episodes. I think it's 10 episodes are out. I watched one last night. A lot going on, by the way, in Love Island. Tonight, they released a new episode, I believe, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Now, it would have been great if they would have released it at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then I could have watched it, and then, boom, you turn right on the game. Now, I have two TVs in my apartment. I wonder, will only one be used tonight? And will I just watch the basketball game and then watch Love Island afterwards, or maybe just watch Love Island the next day? Or will I put up on one TV Love Island, even though we love Mike Breen, mute Mike Breen and Doris Burke and Richard Jefferson, and then watch the hour Love Island as it does come out right at 9 p.m. Eastern time? Stu, that's my Ask the Pros question of the day. What do you think Zach Gelb's going to end up doing?
I think you are going to wind up muting Richard Jefferson and Doris Burke and watching during the NBA Finals, and yes.
You didn't say Mike Breen there.
No, no. Well, why would you mute Mike Breen?
That is true. We'll only have Mike Breen on. Bang! Mute, mute, mute. Puts it in. Bang! Mute, mute, mute. Something about Love Island. Mute, mute, mute. Bang!
It's also in like the middle part of the game. It's not like you're going to miss like a big fourth quarter game winner, anything like that.
You say that now, it's going to be the most wire-to-wire basketball game you've ever seen in your life. Yes, Amter.
I mean, you can record it and just like fast forward.
Are you
commercials.
Off mic?
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Now you're good. So, did he sound off mic there?
Yeah, the mic was turned slightly.
Oh, gotcha. What were you saying?
I was just saying, like, you could just pause the game, watch Love Island, then play the game and fast forward through the commercials till you're caught up.
You're saying pause the game?
Pause the game. Watch Love Island during halftime and whatever else, and then just catch up during the commercials.
Well, that's true. Well, you know what? If Stephen A. Smith is able to play solitaire during the NBA Finals, I could watch Love Island while also watching the NBA Finals. So you know what? I guess I'm watching it. I'm doing it live at 9 p.m. Eastern time. In terms of who wins the game tonight, I'm going with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm laying the 9.5 points. I'll lay the 9.5 points. 63rd, I think this would be, double-digit victory for the season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Alrighty, that was a fun show today. Big thanks to Jerry Harrison Jr. for joining us. Also, big thank you to the lady that was working out next to him and started yelling at him during the middle of his interview. We really did enjoy that. And a big thank you. I thought Chris Persiani did a good job first time on the show. I was impressed with Chris Persiani. Now, we can't use Bill Ryder all the time because Bill Ryder is an insider for CBS Sports HQ, and also he hosts a show here on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm thinking about making Chris Persiani and the Zach Gelb Show basketball insider. You know, Fanta's our college guy, but maybe Persiani becomes the NBA guy for this show. Either way, Stu, thank you. Samter, thank you. Brandon, thank you as well. Ack, thank you. And each and every one of you for listening. We thank you. We'll talk tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. We'll see who takes a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.